Thank you so much. Smaller. I was just going to crack into the first poem. I had it all worked up on the bus coming up from Skibbereen. I was just going to start. But I just wanted to say, actually, that I've worked in mental health for over 30 years now. And what I really felt this evening is this is such a lovely space, and it's so supportive, and it's kind of therapeutic just in its very essence. I just wanted to say, it sounds like plumasque, but like, honestly, that's what I really felt. And I was thinking about some of the people I work with, thinking, my Lord, I should bring them up here. But this is actually about a really good old friend of mine. I just wanted to say that in case you think I just imagined him, although there have been times when I wish I'd just imagined him. But it's called I Love a Man. I love a man who drinks whiskey for breakfast. And you have to be a gifted kind to love a man who drinks whiskey for breakfast and write a poem for a man who drinks whiskey for breakfast. Or imagine flowers and a midnight dance with a man who drinks whiskey for breakfast, who has so much of the cosmos inside him that he drinks whiskey for breakfast, whose love is the love of a bear in the high forest, drinking whiskey for breakfast, who travels the snow line in a vest and pants, drinking whiskey for breakfast, who lies but is not dishonest, is true, and drinks whiskey for breakfast, who would gather the lost to him in laughter as he drinks whiskey for breakfast, making them all feel gifted enough to love a man who drinks whiskey for breakfast.
Thank you.
I seeing as I was saying about what a lovely space this is, and a room full of poets, my confession is I've had quite a difficult relationship with poetry over the years. You know, we've kind of been like uncomfortable neighbours in a way. You know, I don't know whether it's just the stress between trying to make art and make a living, which I'm sure everyone experiences. I'm not asking for any uniqueness about that. Or just, you know, at times, in all honesty, like, poetry's just got on my nerves, you know? Like, I felt the urge to do it and to write it and bring the books out. We'll just kind of get... I've never quite reached my peace with it, you know? I don't know what situation is that I'm actually describing, but I felt it more and more as the years have gone on, you know? Sometimes I wish you just wouldn't bother me, just leave me alone. And then you think, oh, I'm just not going to do it anymore. And then you think, oh, that's quite a nice phrase. Or I'll just write that down. Or, oh, that's a good idea. Or something. I got invited to, many years ago, to a lovely thing they hold down in Skibbereen. And I work in Skibbereen. And I was working nights, so I couldn't go. It was like a 24-hour poetry reading thing. It was just a gorgeous thing that we did. And I wrote this slightly bitter poem when I was on nights one night as they were doing the reading. Working nights while the poets read. In another world, poets read and they whisper sweet profanities to the planets, while the clock here goes on imagining the instant of the clock going off imagining. And the poets fool the midnight birds to song, cup madness in their palms, while the wish for life to vanish, and time limping forward stops, time limping forward stops, and alphabets stutter and dance, alphabets stutter, dance, and this show of glorious, utter uselessness as the dawn fully rises, as the poets read while the air shivers. This collection is...
Thank you.
This collection is my celebration of where I'm from. probably gather from accents, I'm not from around here. Though my mother and father both are, they're part of that 1950s wave of immigrants who left. And so I grew up in quite a peculiar place. Well, I grew up in Birmingham, which, you know, it's where Peaky Blinders is set, if anybody, you know. And I actually grew up in Small Heath, where Peaky Blinders is set. I'm never quite sure about Killy Murphy's accent, which, you know, but anyway. That's, and it was like, when I was growing up, Birmingham was a city of immigrants. It was an industrial city, and now it's a post-industrial city. It's always been a city of immigrants and immigration. And when I was growing up, the biggest immigrant group were the Irish. And so we had this massive part of Birmingham that was ours. It was like purely Birmingham Irish. And so and then we'd always come home with us. We'd always come back to Cork in the summer. And so, you kind of distinctly grew up in two places. And Birmingham's always had not a great reputation for it's not an aesthetically pleasing place, and it's never had the kudos of a lot of other places in Britain, you know. I wrote this poem about it, it sounds like I might have made it up, but it's a very direct experience. It's myself and my uncle Mihal, who live three streets away from us, and it's called "The Maps You Took With You When You Went." When we tatted around the back, there was a kid in a derelict toilet, sniffing glue as if there was some film of urban deprivation. You smoked in the open air, unconcerned, the last free man. At home, the light beneath our sacred heart never ceased its red insistence, and those lost accents continued their meandering accumulation. Alcoholism, cancer, an accident waited. And I'm going back there now to walk the red brick length, the disused road to mass, the cold forgotten angels. And as I'm passing, I'll do what you did. Take off this shirt and fight myself bare chested in the street. And this, thank you. So I grew up in the 1980s. I was coming of age in the 1980s, when the full force of her aim was to dismantle working class communities, and she dismantled working class communities, and I lived through that. It was like living through some kind of strange post-apocalyptic almost place. This is called after the Battle of Saltley Gate, which is quite a famous incident in trade union history in the UK. It was the precursor to the miners' strike. They made the shed out of Cork and Roscommon, from sleepers going to Crewe, Preston, Sheffield, Newcastle on a moonlit day. Metal roof from Saltley Gates, coke stains leached to the sky. Men in the company of men of their own redundant time, of work and shifts and drinking. The vanished class raising the roof, raising a laugh to the memory of itself. And I wrote this poem, which is just called... This one is just called Birmingham. And like I say, I just wanted to write a poem about it. Within the UK, Birmingham isn't seen as, it's not a lovely place, but it has such a degraded reputation in a way, and I've always felt for the people, I loved growing up there. It was great to grow up I have such fond memories of growing up in a really multicultural, vibrant place. I mean, there wasn't much of anything, but we had a lot at the same time, you know. It's called Birmingham. When we had finished in that cleft of rocks by a dirtied sea, You said that if there was an ocean, my running down your legs and your running down my legs would leak into it and be swallowed by gulls whose droppings would feed the plankton, that would feed the whales, that would swim away to Antarctica and mate in the ice with us inside them, until their running evaporated into clouds and came back to us in rain, and it would come back up our taps. So I rushed home with black oil on my trousers, and I drank cold tap water all night long. I drank you for as long as I could, sitting in the silence of streaming cars below, packs of them drifting by on the ring road, so that I could be in the Antarctic with you. We would always be in the blue ice, making noises no one understood. I did a cover version, which is, there's a fantastic poem called "You Bring Out the Mexican in Me" by Sandra Cisneros. It's just, and I just thought, well, musicians get away with it. They just do a, you know, blatant cover version. I think I'll just slightly adjust it and do my own version of it. I just stole it, you know. This is called "You Bring Out the City in Me," and it's after Sandra Cisneros. It's a little bit about my, I've lived in West Cork for 26 years now. After just living in very urban settings, I live in a rural setting now. And yeah, it's wonderful. But every now and then the city erupts from within me, you know. I came looking for a fox. The urgent smell by an orchard. And the flightless duck snatched beneath the old forest splash of a crabapple. But you bring out the city in me. The rich stinking vinegar and the torque like knives flashing or shots amongst a nighttime map of lights. You bring out the shopping trolley and the canal in me. You bring out the moody good-looking swagger in me. You bring out the political marches and the belly fire in me. You bring out the swearing made art and sprayed like graffiti in me. You do. Yeah, you do. You fucking do. You bring out the book in me, the one called "Death of a Football Hooligan" in me. You bring out the terraces in me, the swaying crush of identities tied to forgotten streets and factories in me. The eruptions of life like psychosis in me, the switchback blade of words in me. You bring out all the prizes of me, the nuclear explosion dream in me. You bring out dark streets in me, the waiting on the doorstep for a night shift dad in me, for a late taxi or a lost love in me. You bring out the slot machine thrown to the floor in me, the huddle outside the chip shop in me. You bring out the afternoon drinking in me, the knowing this will go too far in me. You bring out the tiled corridors of workers' pubs in me, the flimsy camaraderie in me. You bring out the great escape ending of this Steve McQueen movie in me, the city in me. Yeah, I think you bring out the me in me. I came looking for a fox, the deep-coloured wild beneath trees, and the wind pushing through old paths like everything mislaid remembered. But you, instead, you bring out the city in me. My son mocks me relentlessly when I talk about where I come from. He just says, "Oh, here we go, more tales from the ghetto." But like I tried to say to him, you know, you got the privilege of growing up Irish in West Cork, and I had to grow up Irish in Birmingham. It was a different thing. So just to assure him that I never exaggerate, I wrote this poem about the revolution I took part in. It's called The Revolutionary's First Takeover of the State Broadcaster. I don't have a radio show, Frank, so I can't simply play the tracks I like without a care for the listener or dedicate a whole show to her. So what I did instead was put on a nightly broadcast and hope she listened, starting with Fred Voss and considering for a moment, live on air, Grace, red light blunt on the wall, the streets below in uproar, the presidential guard in retreat, making Voss the whole program. But then I put on Jeffrey Lehman's Spring Forest, the early tracks, Lillian, the solitary tear in the starry night, Michael Hartnett's visceral, gentle catechism, Roy Fisher making jazz out of an industrial hole, Jeffrey Charlton coming home from a night shift, the anonymous Irish blackbirds scribbled in a margin, and I can hear the explosions in the distance, Frank, the sirens and the cacophony of the last helicopter leaving. And I'm on a roll with Auden, of course, refugee blues maybe, Brendan Cleary's odes to lager, and Tony Harrison with the skinhead by the grave. Keats and Yeats, Grace, yeah, they were on my side. And I even snuck in Sillitoe, Kelman and Anthony Cartwright, though strictly speaking. But what the hell? This isn't their frequency anymore, Lillian. This is mine. And I just stick to the work. This is my show. And no one plays any jingles. I'm the one here in the confessional, the studio. This holy place and these holy fools. This tumult, this ragged roar. I'll spin what I like. And she'll hear, she'll listen, Frank. Don't worry, kid. I know she will. There's just a couple here I'm just going to read. They're quite short. Ideally, you know, when I'm writing poetry, my dream has always been if I could just keep chopping it down to nothing. I'm always trying to get rid. And it's hard enough to get a poetry collection published, but I do have a dream about if it was just white pages, it'd be so beautiful, wouldn't it? You know, if everyone could just imagine it themselves, you know. This is Lost Afternoons after Fred Voss, who was just a poet I adore. I wanted to be with them on a Sunday after Mass, getting drunk in Sunday best suits they'd arrived in, a fence life of women and children, further than corporeal, a chaser of distaste for themselves, for leaving in the first place. I wanted to be under suspicion because of my voice. I wanted to get up, half cut on a Monday morning, and go in to a job I loathed, looking for extra hours to justify so many kids on so many streets sounding like somebody else's son. I wanted the safety net of being from somewhere left, low-wage silence composing with little subtlety. I wanted those last afternoons to go on and on. Many moons ago, when I was first sending off poems here and there, and to my bewilderment getting accepted, I was invited up to do a reading, you know, and I didn't really understand the whole notion, you know. I didn't move in those circles, and in my head I kept thinking, I was actually playing football that evening, and I thought, I'm actually going to carry on and just play the game. It's a very low level, don't get me wrong. And I kept thinking, if I went, I'd just be really cranky, because I'd be thinking I should be. And I wrote this poem in kind of strange kind of idea about the class stresses that come with trying to like as I've just touched on here, about trying to make art and then trying to exist at the same time. They think that I will come stealing wallets and mobile phones, throwing chairs around the accident and emergency. I have to say to them that between here and there, there is a long list of leavings. The city remembers, I tell them. Departures, goings, not belongings. Is he working out of town? And I am the one that left, I say, standing at the microphone, explaining why I use the words I do. We raise our glasses of white wine. Later on, in the accident and emergency, I am as surprised as anyone to find the chair raised above my head. There's a wonderful, thank you. Very kind. There's a wonderful serendipity for me in doing this, in that I just bumped into Paul in the pub. I don't come up to Cork City very often, and we had a rare night out. I was sitting at the bar, and I'd had a few, and next thing I turned around, and Paul was there, and the next thing I was, the book had just come out, and he was offering me a reading. It's just, you know, kind of so cool. And many years ago, my dad used to drink in this pub. We often talked about the Long Valley. He left Cork when he was 25. My mum was 19. They went to Birmingham and stayed for 40 years. My mum's back now. My dad passed away. That generation, the 1950s generation, that Irish generation who built the whole community I grew up in, are kind of, I don't have heroes in life, but they are my heroes, you know. I wrote this poem about my mother. The drunkenness of things being various. She likes the sound of her own voice, likes the way it doesn't quite fit the shape of wherever she is. It's not true enough to the place she left. The buddleia sprouting brick and the silent chimneys are all there. The sound of the factory inside her mouth. But not part of this place all the same. Whatever about the certain intonations and turns of phrase she has picked up. After all these years of sounding like someone else, she likes as the years ahead drop towards silence, that she has all this history on her lips. Thank you. I write about identity and belonging. It's a kind of obsession of mine, reflecting where I grew up and who I am and stuff. And you know, it's not too, there's no aspiration in it. It's just, I'm just trying to describe the factual experience. So I've never, in the 25, 26 years we've been here, and I consider myself to be an Irish man. It's the way I was brought up, is what I was told. And it's a huge Irish community I grew up in. But I've never tried to disown or get rid of my accents. Actually, I can't anyway. But, and like I say, it's better than Killian Murphy's anyway. So it's called The Fundamental Facts of Modern Irish History. I have to go along with all the others, thousands and thousands away from the island, too small for us all to live on, quietly resigned to my role. I have to pass with them from parents and brothers and sisters to live in English cities and become every day the place I left behind, as every day the place I left behind departs. I have to climb into stereotype and work with my calloused hands and build a family with foreign accents and hold their skin to me beneath someone else's sky. I have to bless each day that I left and am left to feel that cardiac tightness slip upon me and remind me that home is in the past and I am always from somewhere else. I have to set fire to the decades, blaze through the contented histories, illuminate the Irish faces just to show they lived and left the existence to light as bright as I can their passing. I'll just finish up there with a few more. Thank you. I'm not, as much as I am obsessed about the idea of identity and what and who you are and everything, and the older I get, I'm really not a nationalist, and I find nationalism such a danger, such a threat to us. I think in it we lose our humanity. I've always thought that the idea of you celebrate success who you are, you're not really doing that. You're more saying to other people, this is not who you are. It just makes you feel really uncomfortable. It's called The Streets Lighting Out of Me. I don't want to die for Ireland, England, Birmingham, or Cork. I don't want to die for any of those nations, cities, places, notions. I don't want to die for any flag. I don't want to die. But when I do, and I will, I've decided, I'll die for something I don't yet know. Not for belonging, which is only saying to the other, you don't. Not for nationalism, which is only a form of civil war. No, for something with those I love gathered by. I'll die for something on a headland, looking awkwardly out to sea and the waves of equidistance. The city streets lighting out of me, showing me the way home. Thank you. I'll just read a few here that are just really just a pure celebration of multicultural urban existence, which I think is so under attack now, which is a thing I experienced and loved deeply. This one is actually dedicated to my sister, because she's the one who remember the... I actually wrote this up in Dublin. I'd gone to do some... I don't really know Dublin. I know Dublin city centre, but I've never lived in Dublin. I had to get a bus out to somewhere to do this community radio thing, and I didn't know where I was. I just had to cross over the road and try and get back out again, and somebody got on the bus who was, and the poem is about her, and it reminded me of other, I spent most of my formative years on public transport, so, and the bus is always great. It's just full of people. This is called Though When They Catch My Eye. I like the desperate for fags people. I like that we're all on this bus together and that no one minds I'm writing a poem. I even like the one who's threatening to find a fictional gangster from a television show and get someone fucking sorted out. I admit, I even like her. I like the philosopher who sits at the front and says, you've got to have a laugh, driver, at the end of every sentence she utters. And I believe she has empirically tested that proposition and found it to be true. I like her, maybe, best of all. I like the beautiful boy who's going into town on that first date, sweeping his phone and sweatshop finery as if getting updates from the stock market of his inner life, toying in his mind and hands with changing his status. We all love him a little bit. I like that the desperate for fags people and the philosopher and the driver and the beautiful boy and the poet are showing the true existence of society and that we are all genuinely in this together, whilst hiring hitmen, laughing and maybe, I don't know, having sex are all possible on a public transport that is, after all, the acme of social living in one place or another. I like all of this very much. Thank you. I'll just finish off with this one. And I would like to just dedicate this to, it's a little bit ambitious to say this, but I'd like to dedicate this to the electorate of France who stopped those fucking right-wing folks from getting elected. If this is called denoting those parts of the form that must be completed. If this was to be my last sodden testament, my rubble note, then I am citizen of places that never used to be, that have just come into being, of redefinition and reaffirmation, of small streams of reiteration and marginal fields, of false starts and blind alleys, of ill-drawn boundaries, where the inarticulate waiting in camps get their chance to inhale all the beautiful air of the world there. Thank you so much.